Hello, hello! Welcome back to the Feel Good Factor. I'm Susmita Veganosaurus and I'm so glad you could join me here today. Hi everyone! Today's guest is Shivya Nath. I've been wanting to have Shivya here on the show for quite some time, and I'm so, so glad we finally managed to make this happen. Shivya is a very, very well-known travel writer, a digital nomad. She has a blog called The Shooting Star, where she shares a lot of beautifully written articles about her travel adventures, about veganism, and so much more. So today I thought, okay, let's talk to Shivya and, you know, discuss more about her life, how she became a digital nomad, and what inspires her throughout her life, what keeps her going, and also how the lockdown has affected her life and how she has pivoted things around. There's a lot of inspiration that's going to be here, and I can't wait to have you all listen to her. Hey, Shivya.
Hey, Susmita. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. And I'm glad after so many months of discussing it, we're finally making it happen.
Yeah, me too. But, you know, there's always a right time for everything. And I guess this is when it was meant to happen.
Absolutely.
So, Shivya, can you tell everybody a bit about yourself, what you do, and generally what your daily life is like as a travel writer and digital nomad?
Sure. So, I guess my journey began almost a decade ago when I decided to quit my full-time job in Singapore and move back to India. And I'd been part of the travel industry for a while, but I figured that I needed to travel more on my own. And I had started following some travel bloggers at the time, and it sounded so fascinating that some people could travel and make a living through that. And I guess I was just curious to explore that path too. So I moved back to India and I started working with a couple of NGOs. I started writing. I started doing a whole bunch of different things. And the thing that stuck around was really traveling. Because, you know, especially as a solo female who was traveling across India, I was having such great experiences, but there were also so many negative perceptions of what it's like to travel in India. And I guess that really gave me sort of a push to write about the positive stories as well, because I felt like only one side of the coin was being seen by other people, but it's actually possible to be a woman and to travel safely and adventurously in India and meet all kinds of mostly amazing people. So that gave me a push towards writing, and that's what I've been doing for the past decade in different forms. So I'm a freelance writer, I run my own blog, I've recently started a subscription-based storytelling project, and of course, I'm active on social media as well. I've written a book. So I guess like traveling and writing is really at the core of everything I do. And since all my work is online, it gives me the flexibility to be anywhere in India or anywhere in the world and still be working on the go. So that, I guess, makes me a digital nomad.
That's so amazing that, you know, you were in the industry, you've seen it. And, you know, the travel industry itself in the official terms would be all about a very specific way of traveling. But the way you do it is extremely different. And especially the part about solo travel, that is something that a lot of people are afraid to do. And, you know, I have to admit that I myself, until I tried it just 2 years ago, even I never imagined that I could go traveling solo. Not just the safety of doing it as a woman, but also like being alone and just doing things by yourself. It didn't make sense to me until I decided to try it out. And then when I did, it was amazing. It just changed my life. And so many people ask me, like, won't you feel lonely? Won't you feel alone, you know, when you're going around by yourself, doing things by yourself? But it's, you know, it's not very easy for me to explain the feeling of doing that. So can you help me with that? Can you help me with what it is like, the kind of feeling you have when you travel solo? What are the advantages it has in terms of emotions and in terms of generally your you know, mental peace and happiness? And also, what are the downsides that you've seen in terms of sometimes being lonely and things like that?
So I guess the one word that sort of sums it up is the feeling of liberation. You know, especially growing up in India as a girl or as a woman, like we're always told that there are so many barriers in terms of the things we can do and the things we can achieve. You know, I remember growing up in Dehradun, and we used to live in a very quiet and pretty safe neighborhood. But still, my mom would be terrified to even let me walk down the street alone to a friend's place. And I think that's the kind of fear that many of us have grown up with. And some of it is justified, but some of it is also rooted in the patriarchal mindset that's very much prevalent in India, no matter which part of the country you've grown up in. You know, just this idea that a woman always needs a man by her side, or needs someone else by her side to sort of tell her what to do or make sure that she's being responsible. But solo travel, I think in a way, challenges all of that. You know, it gives you the freedom to be just who you want to be in a place where nobody knows you, in a place where nobody is telling you what to do or how to do it. And I think it's so empowering in a way to know that you can make your own decisions and you can live with them. You know, you can be completely responsible for yourself and you can make good decisions. And sometimes I feel like just by virtue of traveling alone and having a good time, I think it places you in a position in life to be able to make your own decisions and to take responsibility for the things you want to, you dream of achieving. And so in that sense, I think it's really empowering. But besides the personal journey, I think it's also a very rewarding experience to travel alone, because typically when you're traveling with someone, you're kind of like, I wouldn't say sacrificing, but you are always trying to balance, you know, what you want to do with what someone else wants to do. And oftentimes, you know, you're just kind of in your own little bubble, whether you're traveling with a partner or a friend or a family member. But when you're traveling by yourself, people tend to be a lot more receptive towards you just because they see that, you know, you're by yourself. And I have to say that I've had some of my most interesting conversations with all kinds of strangers around the world while traveling solo, simply because people are a lot more receptive to you being alone. So I guess in that sense, it's also a more immersive way to make deeper connections with the places you go to.
That's so true. And, you know, when you're with somebody, every single decision, you don't realize it while it's happening. You only realize it when you do it alone. But when you're with someone, every single decision you make will depend on both of you, on each other. So if, say, you randomly want to just get up and go out of the room and take a walk down the street, even that decision will be made based on who's there with you. But when you're solo, you can just do it and that's it, right? You just get up, you do it. Any moment, you can live truly, truly in the moment without asking anyone anything, without, you know, depending on somebody else's plans. And that is, like you said, so liberating and so, so true.
Exactly. Also, like, you know, when you're traveling with someone who already knows you, you're already kind of bound to some expectations of who you are and who you're supposed to be. Whereas when you're on your own and nobody really knows you in your regular life, you can be a completely different person and, you know, not feel judged for that. So I think that's pretty exciting as well. And you can discover like new aspects to yourself just by doing that.
So, so true. It's funny that you don't realize it until you actually do it, because when you're with different people in your life, there is a slightly different version of you that you reveal to a different person, to each and every person in your life. So yeah, when you're among complete strangers and, you know, you absolutely don't know anybody, you can be anything, you can wear anything, you can really be adventurous and, you know, in a way uninhabited also.
Definitely. So where did you take your first solo trip?
So I went to Italy.
Oh, wow.
I went there as a part of a vegan women's retreat initially. So that was for about 8 days. But then, you know, like I took the week before that and after that to just go around by myself. So pre-retreat, I was in Rome, and Rome is so, so safe and friendly. It's incredible. I got lost. I'm bad with directions. So I got lost innumerable number of times, and I wandered and wandered in all kinds of streets and got back to my room or got back to wherever I was getting to. And every moment of it felt safe. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm just wandering and that's it, la, la, la. But then my retreat was in Ravello. And it's like, you know, far away on a cliffside town. And it was beautiful. And it was nice to be surrounded by these other women while I was part of that. And then when they found out that my next solo section adventure is going to be at Naples, they got scared. And these are people who would visit Italy quite regularly too. But they still had all these perceptions about Naples. And they're like, oh no, don't walk around there. You know, it's scary and people are like this. It's dangerous, this, that, whatever. But I'm like, you know, I had learned a totally different thing in Rome. So I thought, okay, let's try Naples too. And Italy is a country which, like India, every city, every town, every place is a totally different culture, totally different feeling that you get out of it. And in Naples is when I truly learned, yes, you know, you do need to be safe. There are some areas where you feel a little, you can't just go off into some lonely place and feel safe there like you would in Rome. But even that made me feel, like you said, no, you become self-reliant, you become more alert, you become so much more responsible, and you can't not do it because you only have yourself to, you know, depend upon.
Yeah, I often joke that, you know, just by virtue of growing up in India, I think we're pretty much prepared for the rest of the world.
It's so true. But then see, that's the thing, right? Like you said, how your mom would be afraid to let you go down the road to meet a friend like a kilometer away. It was the same case with me. And growing up in Bangalore, Bangalore is one of the fairly safer cities in India, honestly. You know, we do enjoy a lot more of the freedoms that is not there in many other cities. However, it still is, you know, it can be a scary place depending on where you go to. And I grew up in a very, very protective environment. But even then, even with being protected, even with everything, still you get exposed to a variety of people out into the world here.
For sure. It's a battleground on its own.
Shivya, is writing something that you enjoyed all the time before, or is that something you developed a love for only as you started to travel and things like that?
So I think it was definitely something that I enjoyed growing up. But, you know, obviously you hear a lot of things about how it's not practical to think of building a career around writing, or how some people are just gifted writers and the rest of us, you know, just struggle. And I definitely fall into the latter category. But I think it was something I always enjoyed doing, although I never thought that it's something that could actually lead me to the path that I'm on now. But yeah, it's always been part of my life.
So the traveling is the traveling because you like to do it, but the writing is what supports it, right? That is how you make your living. That is how you earn through your writing. Am I right?
Yeah, so I guess it's a combination of both. Mm-hmm. You know, like, obviously social media has changed the game a little bit, but with blogging, my focus was really on writing. And even on social media, it's really like the captions that people follow me for. So, but I think the two kind of feed into each other, because it's also about exploring, you know, different ways of traveling, being more mindful of your travel choices, being more responsible, as well as exploring places in a way that you can actually connect more deeply with them, with the people who live there, with the environment that you're part of, and so on. So I think it's really both. It's the way you travel as well as the way you write about it. So I think for me, I see it as a combination of both.
Okay. And, you know, the writing part, is that something you enjoy sitting down every time and doing? Or is it like, oh God, I have to get this done, so therefore I have to get it done? What is the process like?
Yeah, so I think it's different on different days. Like I think, like when I'm working on something with a deadline in mind, it gets a lot more towards the latter, where I feel like I just have to do it. But when I don't really have like a deadline in mind, then I have all these ideas in my head. Like every day I sit on my hammock for you know, like half an hour or something, and there are all these ideas flowing through my head. And that's when I really enjoy the process of you know, ideating, of writing, of bringing things to life just through words. And I think that's pretty amazing, because we all tend to use the same words, but just how you string them together can create different feelings among different people. And I think that's what's so magical and powerful about writing. So I do really enjoy the process, but not when I'm under pressure. As with anything in life, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm sure you feel the same way about cooking.
About cooking, about podcasting, about anything. I as long as there's no pressure, I love it. If there's a, you know, it's so funny because I ran my restaurant for so many years. I could develop recipes with peace of mind anytime. But when it came to running the restaurant, if I had to actually, I've never actually made the orders for the customers, because then you have to do it in that whole high pressure. Oh my God, this has to be done fast. Oh, all these people around me, environment. I'm not capable of that, you know. So I relate to what you're saying.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So when you say you sit on, you know, your hammock and then you're ideating, it sounds so dreamy. So do you have a like a little notebook with you where you scribble these ideas as they come into your mind? What is that process like?
Yeah, so ideally I would like, I mean, I do have a notebook that's around me most of the times, but unfortunately I just end up writing most of my ideas on my phone simply because it's a lot more retrievable. So yeah, I have like tens of notes where I have like ideas scribbled down that I can refer to, you know, in the future when I need to.
Yeah, I think copy paste is it does make it easier though. You know, that feeling of writing is different also. You know, it feels nice to actually
definitely
pen to paper.
Yeah, I try to do that sometimes, but it doesn't always happen.
Okay, and how do you decide? See, because you have so many ideas that come up and so many experiences, because you know what you said about how people love to follow you, everybody likes to read your content because of the captions, you know, whether it's on Instagram or because of the story. It's not just about it's not like some technical stuff. There are a lot of emotions, there are a lot of real people, and you know, it's all stories that you share, and that's what makes your work so interesting. But then there are so many stories that you're experiencing on a day-to-day basis. So how do you decide what do you share first, or, you know, what to write about on a certain day? How do you go about that?
Wow, I'm really not that organized to even know, like, how I decide that. I mean, it's like asking you, like, how do you decide what you're going to, you know, make in your kitchen today? So I guess, like, it's based on what's in season a little bit for me as well. You know, like what is something that's on people's minds. But also, I guess there are lots of triggers every day for me. So for example, it could be a conversation with a friend. It could be something that I've read about. It could be something that, you know, is really bothering me just thinking about it. Or it's something that's been sitting in my notes for a long time, and I feel like, you know, now is the time to share this. So, I guess there's no like actual process, but it's just, yeah, I think it's just a matter of what I feel like I should be posting now.
Okay, so you're going with the feelings, which is I do agree that it's the best way to do things. Or rather, it works for some of us. You know, even I'm not the most organized person, and you know, that's why I laughed when you said, when how do you decide what to cook? It's not even about the season or what anybody wants. It's about what's in my fridge. What do I feel like doing right now? You know, what can I? So yeah, going with the feelings is great. And you know, it makes me feel nice to know that that's how you do it, because from the other side, when somebody looks at your work, at your posts, at your social media, whatever, right? It looks like very planned, very organized.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
But yeah, it gives permission, you know, whoever is listening, it gives permission to everyone to know that go with your feelings and don't worry too much about anything else. You do what you feel like and magic will come out. And when, especially if it's a process you enjoy. So which comes down to, do you practice? Like a lot of writers say, or especially content creators, they say that at least, you know, write something every single day so that you can keep on honing and refining that skill and, you know, keep staying in touch. So is that something you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think like all great writers would say that they write like at least a few hours every day. Personally, for me, like, I mean, not that I consider myself a great writer or anything, but in terms of the writing process, I don't think I've ever been disciplined enough to say that, you know, I have to sit from this time and write no matter what. But just by virtue of my work, you know, like I'm writing freelance stories, I'm writing for my blog, I'm writing for my newsletter project, I'm writing for Instagram. So I guess just by virtue of having so many different spaces to write and, you know, just kind of trying to push myself to write a little bit on each, I think just by virtue of that, I do end up writing on most days. So yeah, I think like that has definitely helped in honing the writing skills over time. And I think it's extremely important to sort of develop your voice, definitely to hone the skills, but also to sort of figure out, you know, what is your voice, because that's not as easy as they say it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's like with anything in life, to grow in anything in life, you know, whether it's yoga, whether it's cooking, whether it's meditation, or any other skill, the more you practice, the better you get at it. And I guess with writing as well, there are no shortcuts. So when I do look at my older stories, like things I've written 7-8 years ago, I'm kind of horrified by putting something like that in a public space. But I let it be, yeah. Because it's nice to see the evolution. And I think even if I read something that I wrote just a year ago, I feel like my voice has evolved so much over time. And I think that's only because I've written so much more over time. And I think it's nice to like kind of compare your previous work to your work now and see, you know, how things have changed, whether your voice has become more mature or more yourself. Although that's intangible and hard to describe in words, but you know, just that feeling that you are evolving as a writer and maybe even as a person.
Yeah, that's so true. And you know, you what you said about what you used to write before and then you're horrified. This is a kind of a similar case with me when it came to, you know, creating recipe videos or even my food blog. Especially the videos though. What I used to do, the quality, the style, and how it has evolved over the years. But I like this thought of letting it just be there. You know, that's another thing. People are very worried about their social persona, about how people perceive them, and try to hide away all the old stuff or hide away things, you know, the imperfections. But what I really do enjoy about your writing is how genuine you are, how, you know, authentic you are. And you show your, you know, yourself, though also I do like that you have a way of maintaining your privacy too, you know, that balance, you seem to have got it right. So, you know, people know the stories.
Yeah, I think I'm forever struggling with it.
No, but it's beautifully done because people know all these stories about you, but also they don't know data. They don't just easily have data about you either, you know, which they can use against you. So that's beautiful. And it's so nice that you've left it out in the world so people can actually go back and look at the, like, if I have a favorite author or an actor or anybody, I like to see the curve of their growth over the years. You know, that is a part of being a fan, you know, enjoying that process too. So I'm sure your readers too enjoy that. Like, okay, you know, let's go look at one of the really old articles and then, you know, compare it and see, oh, wow, you know, see the change. And it also encourages people, right? Because you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be a pro at anything. You can just be you and then start off and then, you know, keep on learning, keep on working towards fine-tuning things and getting better. Yeah, so Shivya, can you, you know, it's not a very steady life, you know, being a travel writer and things like that, right? So it's such a freelance thing. You take projects as they come, you do writing as they come. So how do you do it without fear? How do you do it with confidence that this will keep going, this will keep sustaining? How do you get that? Because especially now, you know, with the pandemic, everybody's life was thrown off track. And even what people thought was steady is not steady anymore. So then how do you start with something that isn't even considered traditionally steady and then keep going no matter what?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And to be honest, like during the pandemic, answering that question has been a bit of a struggle. But I think when I first started, like all those years ago, I think it was very scary at times, because sometimes, you know, I would go to sleep and not be able to sleep a wink, thinking of, you know, am I ever going to earn any money? And there were times, I remember I was traveling in Panama, which is, you know, as far as it gets from India. And I think I had only double digits in my account. And it's not that I didn't have money. I had done a lot of freelance work and all my payments had been delayed. And so here I was on this, you know, tiny island, and I had prepaid like some money to my accommodation, but I did owe them, you know, like quite a bit of money more. So I told my host that I would go to the ATM with him on the last day and pay him the remaining account. And I just didn't know, you know, if the money would come into my account by that time. And I didn't have connectivity to reach out to anyone either. Things like this have happened, you know, again and again over time. But somehow the universe has just come through for me, I guess. I think even when I quit my job, and even now, you know, I keep asking myself, what's the worst that can happen? And I have like a rainy day, you know, account, like savings, which I started when I quit my job. And at that time, I told myself that, you know, if I really don't earn anything for, let's say, 6 months at a stretch, and I have to dip into my savings, then it means that I'm in trouble and I need to, you know, go and look for a steady job and stick it out this time. But luckily, over the years, that hasn't happened. So yeah, I mean, I think we tend to become so serious about life and our finances and our careers. And, you know, we wonder, oh my God, what if this happens? What will I do then? But I think we need to stop taking life so seriously, you know, and just kind of have faith that if we're, you know, when we're following our passion, things might work out. And if they don't, then at least we'll have tried, and then we can go back to a job and say, this is the only alternative, but I can still pursue the passion as a hobby. So I guess there's always, you know, like we need a change in mindset to stop chasing money, like making that the prime ambition of life, at least for those of us who have the privilege to make that choice.
Yeah, I so agree with you that, you know, if you have the privilege, then use it, right? Because not everybody has that privilege. So when you do, when you, you know, make the choice to follow your happiness, you're giving permission to others to do the same, because others can watch you and learn and not be scared. I love what you said about how you take your finances as an adventure and you ask this question, hey, what's the worst that could happen? That's like a good way to think of it. Because if you actually sit down and seriously ask that question, you will realize that, you know, it's not as bad as you thought it was. The worst is not as bad as you thought it was. And especially because you have some backup plan, right? And I like what you said about, in all these years, you haven't needed to dip into your bank account for 6 months at a stretch and, you know, try to go back to a regular job. What about through the pandemic? How has that been? Because if traveling and writing about traveling is your, you know, your biggest source of, or your only source of income, then how did you handle that? How did you pivot?
Yeah, so it's been quite tricky during the pandemic. So initially, you know, I think like for the first few months, I was kind of in denial, just thinking that this will pass sooner than later. But obviously, like then reality hit. And now I wonder if 2021 will be any different from 2020. So a lot of my work, you know, was either put on hold or, you know, like canceled or just postponed indefinitely. And I definitely had to dip into my savings. But I've also, you know, I started a new project called Journeys, where I offer loyal readers a subscription-based service where, you know, like I send them a story once a week. And these are stories that I've never told before and I probably never will tell in a public space. So right from secret finds in parts of India and other parts of the world, to a more intimate look at my journey, personal confessions, and so on. So that's a project that I started in December. And other than that, they've been, you know, like a couple of like small collaborations that I've done on social media or, you know, like freelancing. But it's definitely a very tricky time. And I'm always having these conversations with friends from other parts of the world. Some of them are lucky enough to be living in developed countries where, you know, their governments are giving them assistance. But obviously in India, we're not in that, in that situation. So it's important to pivot. But I guess I'm still figuring out if journeys is something that will sustain me over time or if there's something else I'll need to do. But I guess time will tell.
The journeys thing is such a good idea. And that's a nice way. See, that's an important thing, right? All of us need to create several streams of income, and that helps. Another thing is, I think the amount of work that you have built into, you know, really gaining and cultivating your audience over the years, I think this is, that also is a rainy day fund, right? Like, that's what also pays off at this particular time. Because as you said, you had a couple of, you know, collabs and freelance projects, and that would have come only because people, whoever collaborated with you, will see, okay, this is the authority you have. This is the influence you have. These are the people who are following you. So yes, you know, that gives them the confidence to collaborate. And that comes out of years of cultivating and growing that.
Yeah, it's also tricky because, I mean, the social media space, for example, now has changed so much, you know, over time. And there are so many more content creators out there. And I think, like, personally, for me, it's really important to find the right kind of organization or brand to collaborate with. Mm. So it's not that I haven't, you know, like, received offers to collaborate. But if it's something that feels like I'm selling my soul, I feel like I'm not desperate enough to go there yet. And this is, like, I say this with absolutely no judgment, because I know that, you know, different people are in different situations. And, you know, if it's something you have to do, you have to do it. But I feel like I can still hold off a little while longer and try other avenues before doing that. But it is definitely tricky. And, you know, especially for me as someone who's been advocating for responsible travel, for sustainability, for veganism, it kind of really limits the kind of brands I can collaborate with, because I can't be talking about veganism on one post and promoting a brand that tests on animals on the other. You know, I can't live with myself with that. And that's the same with responsible travel, like, you know, promoting responsible travel on one end and then partnering with, like, a company that's asking you to fly on a private jet to, I don't know, somewhere in the mountains. So I think it's always tricky to find a collaboration which will pay you money, but where you can also be true to, you know, who you are and what you believe in.
Yeah, and, you know, I do admire, like you said, yes, people are in different situations. So, you know, from the outside, we cannot judge anyone. That being said, however, I do admire how you stick to your personal ethics and don't waver from them to whatever extent possible. You know, you consciously stick to that. And it's amazing that you've been able to build this much, collaborate this much, and grow this much over the years. Just with this, you know, because so that goes to show, right? Like, if you have a certain audience, you have a certain ideal client you need to attract, and there are plenty of them who will come to you, you know, whether they come in droves right now or, you know, they trickle down one after another, but they are there and, you know, they come to you. And the fact that you have created this brand, like, okay, you know, this is a person who collaborates only with other organizations which are similar to us. That thought also will make a company choose you over somebody else, right?
Thanks. I wish all brands had your confidence.
Talking of collabs, we recently collaborated for my Vegan Immersion Experience course. And I would love to hear, you know, you've written such beautiful things about it on your Insta and everything. But I would also love to hear your experience personally. What did you feel? Because you've been a vegan for quite some time now, right? I think 5 years now. So as somebody who's been on the journey already, what was your personal experience with my course?
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, like, to be honest, I'm quite hesitant to take on online courses just because I never end up finishing them. Like, I'll sign up for all these courses and I'll do, you know, maybe one lesson, and then I just, you know, I don't find the motivation to continue. And so I'm quite hesitant. And I think when you first reached out to me, I thought, you know, I've been vegan for so long. What could I possibly learn through this course? But I'm really glad that you shared the course material with me, and I think like I started the first video and then I just ended up watching like the first, I think, 5 or 6 videos at one go. Even though you meant for them to be released slowly, but yeah, it was just it just felt like there were so many pent up feelings and also some sort of negative energy, and I just felt like, you know, this was a friend reaching out to me and telling me to let go of so many thoughts and to think of different things differently. You know, for example, like when I turned vegan, my family thought that I'd lost my mind, that I'd fallen prey to some Western trend. And I mean, this is not sustainable. This is not practical. This is not part of, you know, like the Indian culture or whatever. But obviously, like for me, like the reason I turned vegan was the ethical aspect and, you know, animal cruelty. And I was very clear that, you know, no matter what anyone says, I cannot like consume animal products in any form again, because now I know. And once you know, you know. But I think it was very disheartening for me until recently, actually, to think that none of my family members have even considered going vegan. And, you know, like whenever I'm visiting my folks, it's always like the part of all family jokes that, you know, I'm the vegan and I'm like the saint or something like that. And like, I mean, I laugh it off, but it also bothers me that nobody's seeing that this is like the ethical way. So I had like all these like pent up feelings of frustration and anger and guilt and all of that. But I think something you said in the course, I think it's really part of me now, which is to think that there is so much more that they've done that I should be grateful for. Like whenever I visit my parents, they make sure that they've gone to a supermarket, you know, the day before, and they've gotten, you know, like vegan granola for me, or, you know, like plant-based milk or something like that. And in the kitchen, they make sure that, you know, no matter what they're eating, there's always like a vegan option for me. And not just my parents, but also, you know, other family members who I've met over time. If I'm at their place, they will definitely make sure that there's like a box of soya milk in their fridge, or they're cooking something, you know, if they're cooking an Indian meal, it's without ghee and without paneer. And I mean, that's all in consideration for my journey. And instead of being grateful for that, I've just harbored, you know, like more negative feelings. And I think just hearing that in your course and hearing you talk about, you know, letting the negativity go and really looking at everything from a sense of gratitude and being more joyful about this journey, I think that really helped me. And that's just the initial part of the course, but there's so much more to it. But I don't want to ruin it for people who will, you know, take the course. But I think it was really helpful for me. And despite the fact that I've been vegan for a while, like there were so many insights.
That's so good to know. And it really, it's so heartening. You know, it makes me happy to see that sometimes you need validation, right? Like you build content, you create it, and you put it out there. But sometimes you need to know that it is helping somebody. Not validation like, oh, wow, this is beautiful. But more like you wanted to touch somebody in an important way. Like, you know, somehow make a positive impact on their life. And hearing you say this, reading what you had sent me, you know, it made me feel so good that, yes, it was worth the effort. And I'm sure, you know, you have stories which are similar to your writing too, when you share a specific kind of a story and people have written back saying how it impacted their life. So is there something, you know, a situation like that, that you have to share a story or something where you've shared something and then people have said, oh my God, this resonates with me. It makes so much sense. And thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really lucky to say that it happens quite often, you know, with readers emailing me or messaging me either about, you know, something they've read on my blog or Instagram or after reading my book. And I mean, like you said, it's just reassuring to know that something that you've put out there has made a difference to someone. And I think that was the first time that I actually realized that this whole idea of influence, even though I hate the word influencer, just the fact that, you know, something that you're creating has the power to influence someone. And I think for me, that moment of awakening was a few years ago, when, you know, Instagram wasn't a thing and I was primarily writing on my blog. And at that point, I was writing a lot more about solo travel. And I got an email from a woman who was, I think, like 60 plus. And she said that she's been reading my blog and something, you know, it triggered something in her. And she decided that at the ripe old age of 60-something, she would take her first solo trip.
Wow.
And until then, she had only been like a daughter and a wife and a mother and a grandmother. But this is the first time she decided to do something for herself. I mean, like you had said, you know, the first solo trip can be so empowering and liberating. Mm-hmm. And I guess she kind of experienced that too. And when I read that, you know, it suddenly struck me that all this stuff that I'm writing, you know, I might be writing it for myself or as a way to preserve my memories, but it can actually influence someone. And I think that for me was a game changer. And that's when I realized that I can't just, you know, like just to get money from a brand, for example, I can't write something because it really makes a difference to someone out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where I really started thinking about my responsibility as, you know, someone who has an audience or a readership.
That's such a beautiful story. And yeah, I can just imagine how you would have felt, you know, reading that email from her. So, you know, earlier you were talking about as a vegan, you travel the world. How have you managed that? Is that easy to do? Is it difficult? Because, you know, often when I hear people say that, oh, I tried to go vegan, but when I travel, I'm unable to do it. But I've seen you go to every remote corner of the world, all kinds of countries, small places, big places, and you've somehow always managed to just stay vegan. How do you manage that?
So I think it sounds kind of impossible to travel, you know, to many different parts of the world and not consume any animal products. And I wouldn't say that it's as easy as showing up and expecting to find vegan food. But along the way, I've learned a lot of different ways to make sure that I'm always, you know, I'm always fed well. And at the same time, I have access to healthy food, you know, good nutrition. But at the same time, I'm also trying the local cuisine as much as possible, whether that's accidentally vegan dishes in the local cuisine or something that's been customized to be vegan. So there are lots of tips and tricks that I've come up with. And there's actually an entire article that I can share with you if you want to link to this podcast. But I would say like the most important things for me, first of all, I think it's really important to get your motivation right to be vegan. Because I think if you go in with the mindset that if you don't find anything vegan, then you just adapt and maybe eat a bit of dairy or eat eggs or something like that, then I think that would be the easier way to, you know, you would just resort to that because it sounds easier. But for me, I've been, you know, just like the moment I imagine where dairy comes from or where eggs come from or where chicken comes from, I know that no matter what happens, I don't want to eat it. So I do other things to go out of my way to make sure that I stay vegan and I'm fed vegan. So for example, before I go to a place, let's say a different country, I try to research as much as possible to see, you know, what the local cuisine comprises of. So, for example, in Ethiopia, I was really surprised to learn that for nearly 200 days of the year, people essentially eat a vegan diet. It's one of the oldest Orthodox Christianity centers. And based on their, you know, like ancient traditions, there is a tradition that for 200 days of the year, you eat fasting food. And by fasting food, they mean no animal products. So you can pretty much show up anywhere in Ethiopia at any time of the year and ask for beyainetu, which is like a vegan platter, which has all these amazing, you know, like lentils and vegetables and salads. Mm. And they make like injera with teff, the grain. Or you can even go to a bakery and ask for fasting food and chances are that you'll find a vegan dessert. Pretty much in every country, there are dishes that are either accidentally vegan or that can be veganized. So I try to, you know, like kind of study the local cuisine and try to identify things that I could eat.
Mm.
The other thing I do is put social media to use. So I always look for the vegan hashtag of the country. So for example, when I went to Iran, which is popular to be, you know, like we popularly think of Iran as a country that only eats kebabs and a lot of meat.
Mm.
And that is true to some extent. But while looking for, like when I used the hashtag vegan Iran, I actually found like somebody who had started a vegan Iran travel network where he's been traveling across the country, finding vegans across the country. And he's kind of built this network of vegans around Iran. And so I ended up staying with a vegan family with three generations of vegans.
Wow.
So there was the, you know, like the grandmother who was vegan because she had managed to reverse her diabetes by turning vegan. So she was for health reasons. And then there was like her son and daughter-in-law were vegan because of spiritual reasons, because they found some spiritual leader who really encouraged them to, you know, follow a more compassionate lifestyle. And then their kids were vegan because of like purely ethical reasons.
Wow.
So it was amazing to live with this three generational vegan Iranian family and eat all kinds of Iranian food that was customized to be vegan, or that was accidentally vegan, or that used to be vegan once upon a time, but now had been, you know, meat had been introduced into it. So really using social media, doing your research before showing up in a place, and, you know, having a strong mindset that you're going to make it happen no matter what, I think it's really helped me on the road.
Wow, that is so cool. And see, this is the thing, right? Another thing about solo travel or veganism or any concept which is kind of off the beaten path, though I do hope all these become more mainstream, which have been happening. But still, the thing about it is there are so many misconceptions. Now, first of all, people don't think it's easy to be vegan when you travel. And here you are, you know, visiting a very, very meat-heavy culture. And then you found a three-generation vegan family, not just one random vegan, but like a three-generation vegan family stayed with them. And that's just so beautiful. It's so encouraging. And again, if you had not been an adventurous traveler, if you had just looked for like the easy way out, right? Which I'm for that too, in the sense of, okay, book a hotel or a resort and stay there and check in advance with the chef that they can give you vegan food and whatnot. That's possible too, and that's well and good. But you took the adventurous path and, you know, going and staying with the family and things like that. And that exposed to a whole new thing, which just never would have happened otherwise. That's just such a beautiful story. You know, you were talking about Ethiopian food. Oh my God, I love Ethiopian food. And I don't know why it's not there in India yet.
Yeah, right. I'm just waiting for that to happen.
Seriously, like, you go to an Ethiopian restaurant and, you know, I've eaten Ethiopian food mostly in the US. And there are so many families who have come down, settled in the US, and then they run the restaurant. You go there and most of it is meat heavy, but that one vegan platter is so rich and so full of veggies and greens and, you know, dals. And oh my God, like,
yeah, it's amazing.
I don't think I would have ever discovered it if I hadn't gone vegan, you know.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, there's a, now that I think about it, there's an Ethiopian restaurant in Mumbai.
Ooh.
That's been, so it's run by an Indian family who lived in Ethiopia for a while. But I think maybe it wasn't so popular and now they've started serving like Indian food as well. But they did manage to get teff and make injera and things like that. So Ooh. It was pretty amazing. I forgot the name, but it's in, I think it's located in Juhu.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty cool. I do hope someone comes to Bangalore too that way, you know?
Yeah.
You can get creative, right? Like, you don't have to get teff to make injera. You can look at the, yes, of course, it's great to do it with the traditional grain, but also you can look at so many of our local millets. I mean, injera is basically dosa. So, you know, you can do a version of injera using like ragi or, oh gosh, okay.
Yeah, for sure.
This line of conversation is dangerous. It's making me so hungry. Do you cook for yourself, Shivya? How are you with cooking?
So I guess until 2020, I would say I was eating out like 95% of the time. And by eating out, I mean I was staying with, you know, I was mostly traveling and staying in a lot of homestays with local families. Or I would specifically look out for cafes and restaurants which are organic, healthy, vegan friendly and so on. So I was pretty much eating like 95% of the time out. And my culinary skills were restricted to like smoothies and avocado on toast or hummus. But of course, during the pandemic, you know, like many of us who don't cook, we had to learn to cook. And like I was telling you earlier, it was actually quite a revelation for me because I realized that, you know, I can cook and it's actually not that hard. So right from making like my own like cashew cheese to, you know, Indian cooking, or even, you know, like making a Thai style stir fry. Mm-hmm. It's not as hard as I thought it would be. So it's been quite a year of learning and experimenting.
You know, I love how when we are cornered into doing something or cornered into having no other option, how these beautiful sides of ourselves come out, all these hidden talents and hidden capacities, you know, just come out and bloom.
Yeah, for sure.
And I like how you said it's not as difficult as you imagined it would be. And I do believe that's because you're cooking vegan food. Vegan cuisine is so easy. It can be. I mean, it can be as gourmet and complicated and as lengthy as you want it to be. If you want to make it that way, no problem. But if you want to do a super simple meal with just like 4-5 ingredients that you have lying around, no problem. Even that's possible. You know, it's all about just putting the right flavors, the right textures, and bring it all together, and that's it. When I turned vegan, I turned vegan 18 years ago, and the concept was unheard of back then. And I had to make everything myself, most things myself, though I did have some options. Most of it I had to make myself from scratch. I even used to make tofu at home from scratch. You know, then of course I got spoiled for choice and then I got lazy. But you know, that being forced into doing that, that is what triggered my passion. Like, turning vegan is what triggered my passion to actually cook and bake and discover other kinds of cuisines and learn more about it. And that being cornered into it is what really opened up my world. And I often tell people this. I'm like, be open to it. Don't just think, okay, I don't like cooking, I'm not good at cooking, you know, or anything. This is applicable to anything in your life. Approach it with some curiosity and you never know what's going to come out of it.
Yeah, actually, I felt the same way, like maybe not so much like towards cooking until last year. Mm-hmm. But just in terms of food, like I think like it was turning vegan that also turned me into a foodie. Because before that, you know, I would just go anywhere and eat anything and not really have great appreciation for food. Like, I mean, most of my food would be like really cheesy or buttery, and that masks all the other flavors. Yes. But I think it was turning vegan that made me realize that, you know, like how your palate can taste so many different flavors, and there's so much in the ingredients and there's so much in every cuisine. So I think it really turned me into a foodie as well and made me so much more curious and appreciative of food. So, and people usually think that the opposite would happen when you turn vegan.
Yeah. That is such a misconception. You think that your variety is actually reduced, but it actually just blows up and expands like crazy, you know. It's so true, so true. Well, Shivya, before we wind up, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners about just, you know, following your joy and how you have made things possible, how you have pivoted when life has thrown you a certain curveball, anything at all?
I think it's high time that we stop thinking like within the box, because, you know, both while growing up and even as adults, a lot of people will tell us that the things that we dream of doing are silly, or they are impractical, or they're good enough for kids, or they're good enough as a hobby. Or even, you know, like even choosing a path like veganism, for example, which is not mainstream, that, you know, it's not the conventional way. And I think we need to stop listening to all these other voices around us and listen to the voice within, because I think that's the one that knows that, you know, like that identifies with our passion, our conscience, and it can really guide us in directions that we never imagined we would move. So I think it's really important to listen to that inner voice more than any of the voices that we would hear externally. And ultimately, I think we have only one life, and this is the only life where we can, you know, pick a path or pick many different paths and experiment and really see what we are capable of and what we're capable of experiencing and achieving and feeling. So yeah, it's great to listen to that inner voice is what I would say.
That is such sage advice. Thank you so much. And, you know, it's never enough how many times people hear this, because this is something we all need to be reminded of again and again. even if we follow it, sometimes we need to listen to it again to realize like, oh yeah, you know, I need to tap into that inner voice. So thank you so much, Shivya. And thanks so much for making the time to have this conversation. I know it's going to bring a lot of inspiration and a lot of value to all the listeners. So I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Sushmita. I'm glad we had this conversation and I hope to see you in person soon one of these days, maybe over an Ethiopian meal.
Oh, that sounds dreamy. Surely, surely, Shivya. Okay, all right then. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Oh my God. Wasn't that an amazing conversation? I loved how easily the whole discussion flowed and how we covered so many topics. Shivya is such an awesome person and I hope you all got really inspired by her message. If you want to get more inspirational content from her, then visit her website, The Shooting Star. I'm going to share the link in the show notes. And also follow her on Instagram at SHIVYA. You will be blown away by the kind of stories that she shares here. And believe me when I say, if you keep reading her content, you'd want to pack up your bags and just start traveling the world. I'm going to share a link in the show notes to her Journeys subscription, the project that she was talking about, as well as my vegan immersion experience course that came up during our conversation. If you enjoyed this episode and if you've been enjoying the feel good factor, then I would greatly appreciate a review on iTunes. Your reviews and ratings help the show get discovered by more people. And this will help spread more positivity and more uplifting energy around the world. And if you'd like to share what your key takeaways were from this episode, I would love to hear from you. I always love hearing from people about the kind of impact, the kind of inspiration they've had from listening to any episode on my show. So I would really love to hear from you. Send me a message on Instagram at Veganosaurus, VEGANOSAURUS. Or if you're going to write about it in a post or a story, make sure to tag me as well as Shivya. And I'm sure she would also love to hear your thoughts on what you felt after listening to her speak. So until next time. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Feel Good Factor. I'm Sushmita Veganosaurus and I'm looking forward to talking to you again very soon. Bye!